All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, talking to you from New York City on the 16th day of November, 2021. I do like to remind you, I'm the editor of a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, and you can sign up for that by going to miningstocks.com, miningstocks.com. You can call our office here in New York as well during normal work hours at 718-457-1426, 718-457-1426. We do like to also encourage you to consider signing up for Chen Lin's letter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling? Go to chenpicks.com, chenpicks.com for that. And also we like to suggest you take a look at Michael Oliver's work as well at olivermsa.com. OliverMSA.com. And Michael has provided just this last week the weekly momentum triggers for key markets, and he's provided that in his newsletter for gold and silver, for the gold shares GDX and GDXJ, as well as the silver stocks SIL and SILJ. And Michael's work has been impeccable, frankly. It's been the best technical analyst that I've ever used, and very, very helpful. And again, I think in just a moment you'll see why my confidence continues to increase in Michael's work. Do want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Sponsors for today's show, Novo Resources, Illoro Resources, Hannon Metals, Labrador Gold Corp, Lion One Metals, SK Mining Corp, and Firefox Gold. I've titled today's show, What Are the Signs of Fiat Currency Destruction? Alistair MacLeod and Roger Moss are my guests today. Central banks now face a dilemma. Either they allow interest rates to rise to sufficient levels to tackle price inflation and lend support to their currencies, or they take one last gamble on yet more stimulus in the hope that recessions can be avoided. Politics and neo-Keynesian economics strongly favor monetary inflation and continued interest rate suppression. But following that course leads to the destruction of currencies, ultimately. Perhaps one of the best comparisons of America's current situation is that of John Law's Mississippi Bubble, in which the French currency was being propped up for a time by massive money creation that caused people to keep the country's equity prices elevated. But ultimately, the system collapsed because of massive malinvestment in the Mississippi Company. Investors began to realize they were lied to regarding the value of their investments in the Mississippi Company. And when debt could not be serviced, the French printed more and more money faster and faster, just as the Federal Reserve Bank is doing now, to keep the U.S. Treasury markets from tanking. At one point, when confidence, however, was lost in the currency, the French currency almost immediately plunged to a state of worthlessness as the public came to realize that they had that they were had by a gigantic Ponzi scheme. With America and much of the Western world following that same Mississippi bubble script, Alistair will help us identify the milestones as we pass them towards the ultimate destruction of fiat money and massive price inflation. He will also explain why, in the end, cryptocurrencies will not replace state-issued currencies, but rather are likely to become just another imploding fiat-denominated bubble. Alistair will explain why the best form of protection against the increasingly likely collapse of fiat money will be real money, that is, physical gold and physical silver, not currency or derivatives. After all, those monetary metals have been selected not by politicians, but by the markets over thousands of years. Dr. Roger Moss will be with me in just a few minutes right after our first commercial break to update us on the success of his company, Labrador Gold. They're having a lot of success exploring that same belt of rocks from which newfound gold is developing what looks like a multi-million high-grade near-surface gold discovery in Newfoundland. And certainly much of what Roger Moss will tell you today and what the company has reported are numbers that look very much like those of Newfound Gold's just south of where Labrador is exploring. As Alistair is sure to remind us, gold and silver are the ultimate monetary metals that have been selected by markets, not by politicians. And so I think it's really, especially now as gold is apparently breaking out into a new, I think, a new bull run, it's going to be very exciting to hear what Roger Moss has to say when we come back after our first commercial break. And also, what Quentin Henning is going to have to say, not this week, but next week, Quentin is going to be with us to talk about not only Novo Resources, but actually each of the sponsors of this program, for which he is either an advisor or he knows their stories very well as an advisor to Crescat Capital. And so I'm really happy to have him with us next week. I should mention, with regard to the gold breakout, the parent gold breakout, Michael Oliver was with us a couple of weeks ago. He mentioned the hurdle of 1825. I think that particular day, a couple of weeks ago on Tuesday when he was with us, gold at that moment was above 1825, which he has set as his hurdle, a weekly close during this quarter, during this calendar quarter, a weekly close above 1825 would really break through and lead us on to the next major run higher in gold. Well, it didn't happen that week, but it did happen last week when gold did clear 1825 by a significant margin last Friday. And so it would seem as though we are now starting a new bull market in gold, the next leg up anyway. Certainly, gold isn't behaving that way today. It was down some $25, I think, from its high in London this morning, New York's morning. The London afternoon, it was down quite a bit, or it has been down quite a bit since then. But it's meandering around 1850 right now, comfortably above that 1825. I'll just tell you that the confidence that I've had in Michael Oliver's work, it's been especially helpful to me to keep me from being triggered in and out of markets at the wrong time. You know, it's easy to get emotional and to throw your hands up and say, it's over, let's get out. But when I've done that in the past, very often I was very close to the bottom of the market. And Michael has been very, very helpful to me, not as a short-term trader, but as a longer-term investor, just to know when the big ones are coming. You know, when are we going to see some kind of a major top or a major bottom? These are very important for long-term investors. Well, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because, as I told you, Roger Moss will be with us to talk about progress being made at Labrador Gold. They've had some really eye-popping assays coming out looking very much like the numbers, very much like the numbers that Newfound Gold has been reporting. But as Roger Moss, Dr. Roger Moss, in his background as a geologist, will certainly know and be able to see whether or not the rocks look the same, which is a lot of times equally as important. It's a huge, long, I think it's about 7.5 kilometer belt of rocks that Labrador is exploring. And it's a very exciting story. And, of course, the market cap much, much lower than Newfound Gold at this time. So you may want to pay attention to it if you're to what Roger has to say if you're interested in investing in gold mining shares. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Roger Moss.
Firefox Gold is actively exploring in Finland, where recent discoveries have sparked a new gold rush. Firefox controls a major portion of a prospective gold belt, giving the company a distinct advantage for exploration and strategic partnerships. The company's strong international leadership team, combined with its Finland-based exploration specialists, will put Firefox on the crest of the coming wave of gold discoveries. Firefox Gold trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol FFOX. Go to firefoxgold.com to subscribe for updates.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQB, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Unfortunately, our guest, Roger Moss, for some reason, is not with us. We just haven't been able to reach him, and we only have one source of connecting with him, and so he's not available, and that's a bit of a surprise to me because he had sent me the things he would like to talk about today, the things I ask, as I usually do, ask my corporate guests what they would like to be sure to focus on, and Roger did send me some things, and what he told me, the things he'd like to focus on, such things as the big vein drilling updates from where they've had some phenomenal intercepts, very rich, high-grade intercepts, looking very much like those just south of that particular point that are being reported by Newfound Gold. He wanted to talk about some new pristine targets to the north of the Big Vein. The significance of that being that those are surface samples or soil samples that were taken, and what it suggests is that they're looking at a source that's very, very close to where they're finding these samples. 7.5 kilometer long belt of rocks. And they just barely started, and they're having success right from the get-go, which I think is very, very encouraging. And then there is a new discovery they just made that's real close to the Newfoundland border to the south, and that's called the Golden Glove Update. So Roger was going to talk about all those things. It's the company has got a market cap of about $143 million in Canadian money. It's selling at 93 cents in Canadian dollars earlier today, 153.7 million shares. LAB is the symbol in Canada, NKOSF in the United States, and that's the way I've purchased my shares. I do own them. I'm very excited about Labrador, and I think with the gold bull market now just starting to move higher or starting the next leg up, notwithstanding today's sort of correction, I would say, that we're on to, I think, the next major move higher in the gold market, which should do wonders for the junior mining sector. And I should say the junior mining sector, despite the fact that gold itself and the share prices have not performed very well over the last number of months, there's been no shortage of money moving into the gold sector. Certainly as the Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world continue to create money out of nothing and throw it into the monetary system, there are people out there that recognize this is a very dangerous game that they're playing in terms of the future of our monetary system and our economy and our society as a whole, and they are seeking to protect themselves. Certainly large hedge fund guys are throwing a bit of their portfolios into gold, and gold is such a small market relative to other markets that it doesn't take a lot of buying power to cause the gold price to move higher. Compared to the treasury markets, it's really a baby. And, of course, silver is a fraction of what the gold markets are. And that's why silver in bull markets for precious metals tends to outperform gold. And, of course, gold falls less than silver during bear markets. But I think we're positioned now for the next run up. And so it's a shame that Roger's not with us. Perhaps Matt, my engineer, will get in touch with him before we finish. I should say that Quentin Henning has agreed to come along next week, so he'll most certainly have a few words to say about Labrador. He knows it very well as a geologist, and I know has Crescat Capital invested in Labrador as well. So what I thought I would do, since in Roger's absence, is talk to you a little bit about what I spoke about in Vancouver at the Metals Investor Forum, and that video of that, of my talk, as well as the other newsletter writers were at the conference, will be available, and I will let you know when it's available to view my talk as well as the others if you care to, and as well as the talks by the various companies that were invited to the conference. I titled my talk at the Metals Investor Forum, "Why Inflation is Not Transitory and the Great Crossover is Underway." And I started out my talk by mentioning The Fourth Turning. It's a book that I think is very important, a very important read of history and an understanding of the historical cycles that societies and monetary systems go through. It's a cycle, I think, that you can go back to and look at in biblical times. So it's nothing new. Human nature doesn't change over time. And when we go through really rough times, we can tend to sort of purify ourselves in some ways. We become, let's say, more aware of our things that we're doing that we shouldn't do. And then humans tend to go through a period of time in which they sort of shape up, as you might say, and live responsibly again and treat each other better, spend their money more responsibly, and live in a way that is, I would say, more godly and more in tune with what brings about happiness and good health. Well, my engineer tells me now, I guess I will have to continue this some other time. I went on to give some reasons why, as we move away from free market capitalism to corporatism or fascism, if you will, why we're going to have some very difficult times. And I think we're starting to see it now in the policies that have been increasingly leaning more towards socialism, away from capitalism, more towards government control, away from freedom of individuals. And I think that's going to be very bad for the prosperity and the happiness and creativity of society. I guess maybe that's a good preview to my talk. And I'll mention some reasons why I'm convinced that inflation is not transitory. But now that we do have Roger, and I'm thankful he's here, let me say hello to Roger. Roger, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome, Jay. Sorry, there was I'm a bit late there. It was tied up.
Well, I can imagine you're tied up for good reasons. Probably a lot of people would like to tie you up and just take away those claims from Labrador and put them in their own pockets. I don't know why you're tied up. A man as responsible as you are going to have a lot of people tugging at him. So I fully understand, Roger, and I want to thank you so much for joining us. Well, I won't spend time on your biography other than say that you've had a rich history as a exploration geologist, a great deal of success, making one multi-million ounce gold discovery in Namibia. And you've been all around the world as a geologist, and you also do some teaching at the University of Toronto in your field. So I did tell people the symbol and all that stuff. So let's jump right into your Kingsway property. It covers 77 square kilometers along the same belt of rocks as Newfound's Queensway project. That looks to me, Roger, like they've got a multi-million ounce gold discovery underway. Time will tell, of course. But most of the drilling carried out so far in your, I think, 50,000-meter program that you have now has focused on the Big Vein target, located towards the southern end of your property, closer to the Newfound property, and you've had some magnificent high-grade intercepts that look very much like the numbers that have come out from Newfound. And just last week, for example, I think it was last week that you reported 76.24 grams of gold per ton over a half a meter and 32.5 grams over 8/10 of a meter. Those are narrow widths, but very, very rich. What can you tell us that you have learned so far about Big Vein?
Yeah, thanks, Jay. We're getting through the meters in the 50,000 meter drill program. What we've learned is that when we started drilling Big Vein, that was what we expected. We expected a fairly wide vein that would hopefully have some good grades with it. And over the course of the last 6 months, we've learned that in fact in this area we now have three discrete zones, Big Vein being just one of them. So in addition to Big Vein, we have the HTC zone, which we've announced results from in the past, and that tends to be quite high grade. So some of those high grade intersections that you mentioned would have been from the HTC zone. But recently we've found that we have a third zone, a little deeper than the HTC zone, and that's what we call that the HTC football zone. So we're still in the process of delineating that zone a little better, but we're confident enough now to say that yes, we have three zones that we know of so far at Big Vein.
Are these steeply dipping deep veins structures or what?
Yeah, the HTC zone itself is very steeply plunging. It's probably plunging at about 70 degrees down to the southwest. We've drilled it to about 200 meters vertically, and mm-hmm. it's still open. And we are in the process of testing below that 200 meter depth to see if we can continue hitting it deeper. Big Vein is not as steeply plunging. It's plunging to the southwest more moderately, probably on the order of about 50 degrees. And those two zones are separated by what we call Big Vein Fault. And mm-hmm. that's interesting because, of course, wherever you have faults, you have ways for fluid to move around and potentially deposit the gold. And that fault, so far as we can tell, is behaving pretty well so far. And then the HTC football zone, we don't really have a good handle on that yet because I think we're going to have about four intersections into it. But it seems to be probably paralleling the HTC zone, but just a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm. So you'll continue to work on those, on the Big Vein and those other two through the end of this year into next year?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're continuing to drill down to the southwest. As I mentioned, both those Big Vein and HTC zone plunge down to the southwest, Big Vein a little bit more shallowly. So yeah, we're stepping out down to the southwest and also drilling deeper down underneath the HTC zone. So mm-hmm. there are two drills there and another drill that's now working out in a more regional area.
Mm-hmm. How closely do you think what you've discovered so far parallels what Newfound has discovered just south of you along the same belt of rocks?
Well, I think the mineralization is pretty well identical from what I can tell. The difference, of course, is that Newfound has put out longer intersections of high grade gold. So that's one of the things that we're still struggling with a little bit. We certainly have the grade, but we don't have those 20 20-meter, 10-meter intervals of those grades just yet. But the mineralization itself, I think it's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Labrador has reported that all along the Appleton Fault, that's that major structure that seems to be so important in this area for mineralization, is that you've reported all along the fault you have intermittent quartz vein outcrops. And as your exploration team has walked over those outcrops, you've found till samples with pristine gold grains. As a geologist, can you explain to our listeners why not only the fact that gold occurrences is important, but also the significance of the pristine nature of those gold grains? Could you explain that to our listeners?
Yes. So this was a very exciting find for us. We did the till sampling earlier in the summer, and we got the results back probably about a couple of months ago. And I put out a news release, and people were confused, I think, and which is probably my fault for not explaining it very well in the news release. But to me, this was really exciting because when we have pristine gold grains, now you have to imagine that these gold grains have been deposited by glaciers that have scraped these gold grains off of some rock as they mm-hmm. as they went over the surface, and as those glaciers melted and retreated, they drop these gold grains and other bits of rock and sediment that make up the till samples. They dropped all that out of the glacier as the glaciers retreated. So what we can say when we look at these gold grains, because they're pristine, and what that means is that they have really sharp edges and pointy mm-hmm. edges. And as you know, gold is very malleable. So if you abrade a grain like that for any length of time, it's just going to be folded over and rounded up into a ball like a gold nugget. Mm-hmm. But clearly that hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. So what is really exciting about that, those gold grains, is that they didn't come very far. Mm-hmm. And the consultants that did the work for us believe that it's unlikely that they came further than 200 meters away.
Wow.
So what we have is now between Big Vein and those till samples, there's another source of gold that produced those gold grains.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, we have a drill looking for that source.
Mm-hmm. Can you drill through the winter up there?
Yes, we can. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the plan.
And your plan? And okay, good. Now, I have to ask you about a new discovery, the Golden Glove, which is right down there almost very close anyway to Newfound's property. What can you tell us about Golden Glove?
Well, the funny thing about Golden Glove is that it was, first of all, the name came about because the prospectors that were sampling the vein, one of them had a pair of gloves on. He wears gloves in the field to protect his hands. And when they finished sampling, there were all these flecks of gold on his gloves. And so that's where the name came from, Golden Gloves. But we had some incredible assays from that outcrop. Now this is an outcrop of quartz with gold with visible gold in it. And the assays that we got from there was something like 340 grams a ton, 190 grams a ton, 84 grams a ton. Now these are all grab samples, so we just hammered them off and put them in the sample bag and sent them off for assay. But what's really interesting about this is that these are as good or better than the initial samples that we got from Big Vein a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very excited to be doing more work down in that area. And we're in the process of getting our permit applications in for drilling. And we expect that we'll be able to be doing something there early next year. And that's going to be really exciting because that could be as good or better than Big Vein.
Oh, well, we'll have to look forward to that. Certainly, how much of the 50,000 meters have been completed, your current drill program? How many, are there a lot of assays in the lab yet waiting to be released?
Yes, there are always lots of assays in the lab, or samples in the lab, yeah. So we have about, I think we're probably up to about 17,000-18,000 meters. And I would think, now I'd have to try and remember how much we've actually, how many assays we've got back, but we're usually at the point of about 60% of assays that we've received. So there's probably about 40% still in the lab.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you're well funded to get to move into next year.
Yeah. So the funding is we still have about 30 million Canadian in the bank, mm-hmm. and so that's certainly good enough to complete our 50,000 meter drill program and probably enough to double it to 100,000. So that not that I'm saying we're going to do that right now, but mm-hmm. If we continue to have success, especially when we start drilling some of these regional targets, then I could see the drill program growing pretty easily.
We have I believe something like 7.5 kilometers. Of strike to explore, and you've basically just nipped the surface, I guess, at this stage, right?
Yeah, well, I think a big vein. We've probably drilled about 400 meters, and there's 7.5 kilometers of what we call that quartz vein corridor, mm-hmm. and beyond that, there's probably another 4.5 kilometers along the Appleton Fault that's further to the north. So, there's a lot of very prospective ground along that fault that we still have to explore significantly.
All right, Roger, we'll have to leave it go at that, but I thank you for the update, and we'll be looking forward to drill results and keeping up with your story as we go forward. Thank you so much for your time today, Roger.
Oh, you're welcome, Jay. Thank you.
All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but Alistair McLeod will be with me right afterwards to talk about the milestones on the way towards a currency destruction. Not a happy story, but one we want to be ready for as much as possible. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Alistair McLeod.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barakoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Happy to have Alistair McLeod with us once again. Thank you, Alistair, for joining us.
That's my pleasure, Jay.
I would like to talk to you about your October 29th piece on the markers that we might be looking towards a fiat currency destruction. You've talked about it frequently, and, the mainstream media just sort of scoffs at that idea. I think I read something this morning that somebody was saying, I think it was President Biden's National Economic Council Director, Brian Deese, something like 20-some years old, central planner, main spokesperson for the White House on economics. And he told Jake Tapper at CNN that things are working out swimmingly well, exactly according to plan, he says. It seems as though, in sustainable economic policy, massive spending creates massive inflation, which creates an increased demand for government subsidies to afford basic products, which creates a growing dependency on the government, which creates a need for massive spending. Wash, rinse, repeat. And sort of the socialist policy, I suppose the Keynesian policy in a way, the neo-Keynesian policy. You started out your October 29th piece, and I quote, you said, central banks now face a dilemma. Either they allow interest rates to rise to sufficient levels to tackle price inflation and lend support to their currencies, or they take one last gamble on yet one more stimulus in the hope that recession can be avoided. Politics and neo-Keynesian economics strongly favor monetary inflation and continued interest rate suppression, but following that course leads to the destruction of currencies, end of quote. So you went on and talked about the different waypoints along the way and how we can recognize what's going on, even if the media isn't going to recognize it. You're suggesting there are ways that we can keep track of where we're at in this process towards currency destruction. Waypoint number one, you said commentary in the mainstream media has yet to address that interest rates, rising inflation, rising inflation and rising interest rates will inevitably cause rates to rise. That is, inflation will inevitably cause rates to rise. And it has to be expected at any time, you suggested. As you show, and in that process, in your piece, you showed a chart of the 10-year U.S. Treasury, and you talked about this and have written about this frequently in the recent past, about how it is, before we started talking seriously about tapering, before the Fed, I don't know if they've ever talked seriously about it, but before they started talking about it, the 10-year Treasury started to rise already, breaking through key points. It's well above its 55-day and 200-day averages right now. So where do you think we're at now in this process? Let me maybe just ask you to discuss waypoint one. What are the things we should be looking for there?
Yeah, well, waypoint one, I mean, it's rapidly approaching. And, the choice, basically, the Fed has got a choice. Either it supports financial assets and does so against a background of rising inflation, and I'll come on to that in a moment, because rising inflation leads to rising interest rates. It's as simple as that. And even if the Fed don't do anything about it, then they will find their hand forced on the interest rate front. Now, that would obviously undermine not just bond yields, but also undermine the equity market. Mm-hmm. And this is where the Fed has a problem, because it has been pursuing a policy of engendering optimism in the economy through inflating financial assets. So if suddenly, because of rising interest rates, you face a bear market in equities, then that is going to, as far as the Fed is concerned, undermine economic confidence. Mm-hmm. So what they should do under those circumstances is increase quantitative easing. In other words, inject more money into investing institutions such as pension funds and insurance companies in return for the Fed adding yet more treasury and agency stock on its balance sheet. Mm-hmm. So you can see that you've got a problem here, because we have rising inflation, yet if the Fed starts to print money in order to keep markets buoyant, that's just going to make the inflation problem worse. So, what are they going to do? It seems to me that, if they try and support markets, they trash the dollar. If they don't support markets, the foreigners will, who own, I think, roughly $14 trillion worth of U.S. equities, they will start selling, because the only reason foreigners hold equities is because they want to make money. And if you're no longer making money, there's no point in having them. So, you know, this is potentially a very unstable situation. So this is waypoint one, the decision that the Fed has to take. What is it going to do? Is it going to sacrifice the market or sacrifice the dollar?
Waypoint two, then, talk to us about that. Again, the media doesn't see anything wrong. They think they continue to believe what this young man in the Biden administration suggested. We should just keep spending more money to stimulate the economy. The Fed can keep printing money, they think. They don't seem to be overly concerned. I don't hear a lot of talk in the media, Alistair, about concerns about the foreigners no longer buying treasuries and reducing their holdings. There's not a lot of concern about that. There seems to be this notion that the Fed is omnipotent. They can do no wrong, and that they will bail us out once again. But talk to us about waypoint two. The Fed is likely, I think everybody pretty much agrees, and it seems this young man in the Treasury Department or in the White House is telling us what they're going to do. They're going to do more of the same, right? They're going to print more money. It's the neo-Keynesian way. Waypoint two, then? What are we looking at?
I'm just amazed, actually, at what you're saying about this economic advisor in the White House. I mean, it's scary, actually, Jay. I think it's very scary. But anyway, we'll move on. Waypoint two. The Fed, as I wrote here, the Fed will have a straightforward choice. Resist market pressures for higher interest rates to save financial markets, stave off insolvency by over-leveraged borrowers and minimize government funding costs, or protect the dollar by raising the funds rate sufficiently to take all expectation of higher rates out of the market and ignore the financial carnage. Mm-hmm. So really, it's just down the road from waypoint one in essence, because once confidence starts going in financial markets, and once particularly interest rates start rising, mm-hmm. bond yields start rising, particularly at the short end of the curve, mm-hmm. you will find that banks will not be interested in lending money to the corporate sector, the non-financial sector. Mm-hmm. They will be more interested in stripping out the difference between the rate which they pay depositors, which they won't raise. I mean, if interest rates go up 2-4%, they won't raise what they're paying the depositors, because there's no need to. I mean, depositors are depositors, and they got nowhere else to put the money. So the answer is quite simple. You don't raise the rates you pay your depositors. But what you can do is you can get higher interest rates, because really all a bank is a dealer in currency, currency and credit. So, you can get more on the asset side of your balance sheet by either buying debt, where the price has fallen to reflect a higher yield, so you can do that, or alternatively, you can lend money to speculators who want to rip out the difference between the cost of borrowing at the moment and what they perceive to be the purchasing power of the dollar in the future.
Wow.
That's going to be an increasing problem, because that's just going to just drive expectations for even higher rates, which I think is the last thing the Fed wants. So, Mr. Powell, which way is it going to be?
Yeah, well,
we're not at that point yet. I mean, we're a lot closer to waypoint one. I mean, we can actually see waypoint one coming up, but it's the sort of waypoint two is an extension of waypoint one, as it were.
Right. And it's that point where the Fed is going to have to make a decision. It's closer to that point, right? It's going to be forced to make a decision. And people do seem to think that the Fed can control interest rates. I mean, you never hear people talking about the Fed as being forced to raise rates. You don't hear it that, but I think that's your viewpoint generally, isn't it? In this rising inflationary scenario, you know, the Fed, the rhetoric is always the Fed's in charge. The Fed is going to raise rates. The Fed is going to taper and not taper. The Fed is in control of everything, and that's the mindset that they want us to have, I suppose.
Absolutely. I mean, I was a stockbroker in the 1970s in the UK, and I saw the situation where the central bank lost control of the markets. I mean, don't think that it won't happen in America. Right. It will, because the problem is that as interest rates rise, as bond yields rise, if the Fed tries to help the Treasury fund at too low a level, you will find that the auctions just won't, there are always some people you can persuade into the auction. You just lean on a few people. But basically, the system will begin to fail. That is the problem. So,
And then when people start to recognize that there are no buyers for these treasuries and it has to be totally monetized, is that when you think some people will start getting the heebie-jeebies?
Well, yes. I mean, and even a little bit before then, because as I said earlier, there is so much, weak holders overhanging the market. I mean, why do you own equities? You own equities because you think they're going to be worth more tomorrow. The moment you begin to doubt that that's the question, that is the outcome, you then really haven't got a proper reason to hold equities. That's what it boils down to. And this is particularly true of foreigners, who I think will be very ready sellers at the first sign of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Waypoint number three, then. What does that period look like?
Well, here we're looking at consumer demand. Now, this one is an interesting one, mm-hmm. because there will be a point where consumers really begin to push forward their purchases. What I mean by that is that they've got cash. They've got cash because the government has given them cash and they've been locked down. So the amount of liquidity to hand has rocketed. I mean, there's a chart which the St. Louis Fred system does of household and non-profit making organizations, you know, their cash balances at in the banks. And I mean, it's a scary chart. Everybody's absolutely up to their eyes in dollars. The liquidity is incredible. Now, either they turn that into savings, which, with all due respect to my American friends, I think is unlikely, or they seek to normalize the level of their liquidity relative to their spending habits. And what that means basically is that there's something like a couple of trillion dollars likely to hit the streets in the coming months, which will be accelerated as soon as people begin to see that not only have prices gone up, but they're going to continue to go up. That at some stage will turn into a situation whereby people begin to think, now hold on a minute, what is actually happening here? All the prices are going up, my dollar's buying less. Is it because my dollar's going down or the price is going up? I need to think about this. Now the moment the majority of the population begin to understand that it is the dollar going down rather than prices going up, then, as von Mises said of inflations in his experience of inflations in the 1920s, Europe said the moment the public realize that, there is no hope for the currency.
Right. And is that then, go ahead.
Yeah, this is important because what is feeding it? If you look at M1 money supply, I was calculating since February 2020 to September 21, it has gone up 400%.
Wow.
This is the narrow measure of money. That is an annualized inflation rate, because it's just short of 2 years, of 230%. I mean, we have never seen anything like this before. And on top of that, we have got a couple of trillion excess money out of that, which is in consumer hands. So, you know, the idea that inflation is transient and don't worry about chaps, you know, it'll all sort itself out in the fullness of time. Forget it. That's not going to happen. Yeah. And I think, the realization that that's not going to happen, and actually what's happening is the dollar's going down rather than prices going up, that will be the beginning of the end for the currency.
But of course, that's what we've been seeing. That's what I think that's taking place now. That's starting to happen right now. We're seeing almost everything rise. I mean, it's bond prices, stock prices, commodity prices. You know, not every day everything going up, but generally speaking, everything is rising, denominated in an increasingly worthless dollar, right? That's already happening, but it's just that the masses don't recognize it yet. Do you agree?
Yeah. Well, we're particularly talking about the prices of goods, you know, food, the sort of stuff, the essentials, you know, energy, gasoline, all this sort of stuff. The things that you actually buy in the normal course of your life, they are going up, and they're not going to stop going up because of this massive money printing. And, of course, the amazing thing is that the authorities seem to pay absolutely no attention to any link between the quantity of money, changes in the quantity of money, and changes in its purchasing power. I mean, it's not the only factor, but my goodness, when you get an explosion of M1 currency like that, then, you know, surely someone is going to understand that it's going to be a price effect and a major price effect down the line. And that's what we're seeing now, Jay.
You're starting to see it. 6.2, I think it was the latest CPI print in the U.S. And these are the essential things that we're talking about that people have to stay alive. Alistair, I'm horror-stricken here. I've only 4 minutes left, and I have so much more to ask you. Waypoint 4, then, would be when things unravel very quickly, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really what, you know, that really follows on from people really understanding that it is the currency going down and they must dispose of it as rapidly as possible. But that equates to the situation. I mean, we heard the tales in the Weimar Republic of, you know, the man who goes and collects his pay from the bank, puts a check in, gets a wheelbarrow load of paper marks, goes along to the shop, goes into the shop to spend the money, goes out to get the money. The money is dumped on the pavement and the wheelbarrow is stolen. You know, it's that sort of endgame, the Venezuelan situation, if you like.
Well, obviously that's situation. Extremely unstable and society can't function like that. So there has to be a change. Yeah. There would have to be a new currency, which leads me to my next question. My wife is always telling me, I can't see anything other than the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. It can't happen. There's no other currencies out there. But if we come to a situation like that, something has to give, right? There has to be a new system. And historically, it's gone back to, if the markets are allowed to have any say in the matter, it goes back to the monetary metals, gold and silver.
Yes. Absolutely. And I think in practice, what will happen is that at some stage in this falling purchasing power of the dollar, the administration, like the U.S. Treasury and, you know, everybody involved with the money side of things, will understand that the game is up. And basically what they've got to do is stabilize the currency, mobilize the gold reserves. And I am actually writing an article which will be released on Thursday, which shows how it can be done. And it's actually quite an optimistic outcome if what I think should happen actually does happen. So it's not all gloom and doom, but it does mean that this can only happen after people's savings have been trashed, after the middle classes have been more or less impoverished. I mean, it will be a very unpleasant situation where people have money which buys virtually nothing. It will get to that sort of level, but they will stop it and they will have to reintroduce sound money. Forget things like cryptocurrencies, central bank digital currencies. I mean, no central bank digital currency has been discussed in the view that, you know, we're not going to issue any more currency. This is going to stabilize it. No, they do. They want to do it because they want to have an extra currency to issue. I mean, it's still inflation. I mean, the answer is, as you rightly say, metallic money, which is basically what is selected by individuals to act as their medium of exchange, and it should go back to them. And it always does. When government fiat fails, it always goes back to those two.
All right, so that's what you want to own. I wanted to ask you about Basel III and why you think that we may be getting very close to the tomfoolery that's going on from the major central banks, but we're out of time. Basel III, though, comes into play January 3rd, or the first business day of the new year, right? And do you think we're starting to see some signs of that now?
Yeah, it's already in play in America and Europe. Unfortunately for the bullion banks, suddenly there's huge demand for gold futures. And we've seen 100,000 contracts added in the last, well, really since the beginning of this month. That is making their life extremely difficult. And I would think that they're probably now short of a gross value of something like $60 billion in the swaps. I mean, that is huge. It really is mm-hmm. huge. And it's going right. the wrong way for them. But
all right. You know, and then people are demanding delivery then more than in the past?
Well, yes, they have. I mean,
it's and the banks have to unwind.
Yeah, well, you can see the deliveries going through COMEX. I mean, we never used to see that. That's the first thing.
All right, we'll have to leave it go at that, Alistair. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Basel 3 for another day, hopefully. And thank you so much for being with us. Always very great to have you with us. That's it for this week, folks. Next week, Quentin Henning, as I said, will be with us to talk about Novo Resources and El Oro, Hannon Metals, Lion One Metals, SK Mining, Firefox Gold, Labrador Gold. He'll be with us. And also Michael Oliver will be with us once again. Michael called 1825 as the key point to set us off to the next run-up in gold, and looks like he may be right. But that's all for this week. Until next week, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Labrador Gold is an exploration company focused on its flagship Kingsway project, located in central Newfoundland Gold District. Labrador Gold's first phase drilling program has successfully identified high-grade gold mineralization, including a 3.6-meter intercept, grading 20.6 grams per ton gold, and 1.85 meters, grading 50.38 gram per ton gold. The company has approximately $35 million in the treasury and is led by a world-class team of CEO Roger Moss and technical advisors Sean Ryan and Quentin Henney.